Our first and only review of the day is going to be for Avatar The Last Airbender. Not the 2010 movie, not the cartoon that came out in 04, 05, ended in 08. No, we're going to do the live-action Netflix TV series, Avatar The Last Airbender. Much people have been talking about this, as before stated, before the review started. Yeah, this was big, especially for millennials. You know, this was a big cartoon that came out, Avatar The Last Airbender, the cartoon. It's not even considered one of the best cartoons. But one of the best shows ever, period. It's pretty high up there. If you probably see a list of best shows, it's probably my, you wouldn't be surprised if this would be on that list. We did a review of each book of the season there in anticipation leading up to this live action premiere. We're going to be putting out those reviews pretty soon. Mike joined us for one of those reviews, book three. So that was very nice of him to do. But me and Nick did book one and book two. We kind of ranked the seasons as well. I think season two is the best season of this show. Mm-hmm. And then followed by book three and then book one. Do you guys have any particular ranking of the season?
Probably two, then one, then three. But one and three are like kind of interchangeable for me.
Mm. Yeah. What about you?
Because Zuko is my favorite character, it goes back between two and three as my favorite, because two is like his metamorphosis and his struggle and his, you know, the beginning of his turn to the light. And then we get season three, he makes that big decision and he, you know, becomes part of Team Avatar and he becomes Aang's primary firebending teacher. It's Zuko's character arc is incredible. And so for me, it varies between two and three, but one is definitely, it's still great, but one would be at the bottom.
Mm. And in this first season of the live action show, it is basically adapting book one from the show. So they're basically condensing it. And book one had about 20 episodes of it. So they're condensing that to these 8-episode series here, 8-episode first season. And about each episode, it kind of varies in length, but about it, you know, about each episode, it kind of comes close to an hour long episodes there. And we'll talk about it as we're going to review it, but they do condense some story elements there. They do combine some different episodes into basically one episode. And I'm going to try as much as I can not to go like, well, in the cartoon, they did this, and in the cartoon, they did that. I'm going to try to judge it on its own and, you know, in its own thing there. So in case anybody didn't know, or anybody hasn't seen Avatar The Last Airbender before, it's about the story of the Avatar, who's Aang. He was lost 100 years ago, trapped in the Avatar state underwater. He got freed by two waterbenders, Sokka and Katara, who they actually say their names right. In the series, it's not like the M. Night Shyamalan movie where he's Aang and she's Sokka. They actually do say their names right here in this. So, yeah, he ends up getting freed by them and sets off his quest of learning about the recent world and what's been going on since his absence in 100 years. And then when he's been gone, well, things turn to shit. The Fire Nation, basically, it's a 100-year war going on. They've basically taken over a lot of territories in the Four Nations, and they've basically created this rampage here. And he has to restore balance. That's all about what the Avatar does, restoring balance there. And the Team Avatar is what they're called, of Aang.
The gang.
The gang, Katara, Sokka there. So you see them kind of going around there. So I'm going to go around and get you guys' opinion, what you think of this live-action series. I'm going to start with you, Mike. What are your thoughts here?
I think there are some genuine... I didn't hate it, which is kind of a low bar. Like the Cowboy Bebop live-action show, I hated that. But I did not hate it. I think both as adaptation and as well as its own thing, it falls short in the matter of just condensing so much stuff. However, I do think there are a bunch of original ideas and more kind of twists and subversions that I do like initially before it takes a strong nosedive into either mediocrity or just absurdness.
Okay. Chris, what about you? You're all mute there.
Oh. I think I follow behind Mike. it's hard not to compare it to the original animated series because it's a direct adaptation. It's definitely better than M. Night Shyamalan's movie, but it's not as good as doesn't capture the heart or the joy, the light, the humor that the animated series had. I think everyone will agree it's hard to condense a 20-chapter story into 8 chapters, and you're trying to squeeze everything in to 8 chapters to the point where we're getting characters we haven't even met yet in book one. I was really confused when we got to the episode Spirited Away, mm-hmm. when we were already getting the spirit of knowledge, the owl, from the library under the desert. We meet Toph before we meet that owl.
Oh, yeah. Though, interesting though, this owl is voiced by the voice of Oogway from Kung Fu Panda.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that. But yeah, that really threw me off. I'm like, wait a minute. We don't meet this character until book two, until after we meet Toph. So that threw me off. When they go to Omashu, we're meeting Jet and the scientist, played by
Danny
Pudi. I'm like, we don't meet Jet in Omashu. We don't meet the scientist in Omashu. The scientist is chapter 18 before we get to the Northern Water Tribe. Like, there's a lot in that they really squeezed together that it didn't, like, the first 5 episodes were really jumbled and messy. Like, it was hard for me to follow. I was familiar with what I was seeing because I watched the animated series, but there's so much I'm like, okay, they're really packing it all into one thing and it's not really working. The last 3 episodes kind of get to breathe and be their own story, but the majority of the series, there's moments to celebrate, but for the most part, it is a miss. But to Josh's point, they get the names right. They get the bending execution a lot better than in like Shyamalan's movie. The wardrobe is fantastic. The casting is great because in the animated series, most of the characters are East Asian coded, and the water tribes are, you know, are like indigenous, you know, coded. So,
well, you got like 90% of the casting right.
Yeah.
Sadly, I do think Sokka's actor is probably the one who's probably the best of the main kids, but it's like at the same time, he's the one who's like not technically, he's the only white one.
Yeah, like what's the backlash surrounding that? Because
the
like,
thing happened. He said he was from a Cherokee tribe, I believe. And then they're like, okay, you did an audition, you did it well. And you said you're from the Cherokee tribe, you're clear to go. But then, Cherokee tribes, like, the ones they contact were like, no, he's not. Like, he just said that to, like, kind of, like, you know, get in. But
so he lied about being indigenous.
Yeah. I partially respect the hustle, but at the same time, like, damn, dude.
I heard about that. That's so crazy. And it's crazy because he's one of the better performers on the show. Like he brings a whiny angstiness to the character that was definitely part of the animated character. But it's crazy that he kind of lied about that.
Yeah, and Ian Ousley is his name.
Ian Ousley, yeah.
And this is him right here. He kind of looks somewhat kind of similar, I would say.
Sokka. Yeah, yeah. Like, he's a great Sokka. He's just not actually indigenous, that's all.
Yeah. One Piece actually got most of the casting right. And the only stuff that's like, you know, it's not a huge deal is that, like, you know, Inaka, who's like Luffy, is like Mexican. And Oda said, like, Luffy's real world, like, country equivalent would be Brazilian. But it's like, that's not a huge issue and stuff like that. And there are definitely places in One Piece that are like, I mean, most of One Piece is like based off like actual cultures or like groups. It would be weird if like kind of in the Skypiea arc, if they were all like white or Asian. Cause like Skypiea is like obviously like Southern American indigenous. So, but it's like, you know, we get to it when you get to it.
Yeah. And obviously Arlong is clearly black. clearly very black.
Man. Yeah. What's the Fishman story about? Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Netflix, you know, they've been doing a lot of these now live action adaptations. We mentioned Cowboy Bebop. We mentioned something like One Piece, who, you know, who would have thought, like, at all the animes and stuff decent. Could adapt, One Piece was actually pretty good. A lot of people like One Piece. A lot of people really like this, enjoyed it. I know Mike is a big fan of the One Piece anime. I've only seen a little bit of it.
I'm more of the manga guy, just because it's so hard to translate Oda's like writing and artistic style to animation, and you do kind of get the very fillery and like not super high quality animation scenes with some of One Piece, but yeah.
Okay. So I'm not as connected to One Piece as I am probably the Avatar Last Airbender, mm-hmm. but I think I was seeing a lot of fans of it pretty much liked it. I think they enjoyed it. Like you said, it had the difference of Oda, who's the creator, who had more of a, you know, connection to the actual adaptation. He was on the project all the way through. He approved the casting. I think this was 10 episodes. I think did a good job of condensing the arc that this kind of follows here. And the sets also, they built those sets, you know, they built the boat that they're on and everything. I think that's kind of the difference here in Avatar Last Airbender in the show here, is that a lot of the stuff, like you see the backgrounds and everything, like it just clearly looks fake. Like it just clearly looks, they're not standing in actual, like, people building props and everything. Like when they go to Amashu, like you just clearly see, like, okay, this is kind of a fake background. And we also mentioned how terrible these adaptations can be, like something like Cowboy Bebop, as Chris mentioned before, that one. And I'm a big fan of that anime, love that anime. And I tried to go like, okay, well, I'm trying to divorce all feelings from that anime, which is considered one of the best of all time, trying to watch this objectively. And that was just garbage. That was kind of bad. There's nothing there. And I think with, you know, somewhere in between the One Piece live action series and the Cowboy Bebop live action series, somewhere lies the Avatar, the Last Airbender, the live action.
I think that's fair.
You know, like it's somewhere kind of in between there, where I don't think Avatar, the Last Airbender is, I don't think it's god awful. I just don't think it's like, even if you didn't know anything about Avatar, the Last Airbender, and you know, you want to recommend the show, could you at all go like, hey, I got a good new show that you could check out for you to watch? Do you think that's something you'll be able to tell people who never don't even know anything about Avatar Last Airbender, never seen the cartoon? What about that?
I wouldn't say so, because it's one of those adaptations where it's very clearly an adaptation that like knows it has a huge fan base and stuff like that. And there are scenes in this that are very particularly like stick out to me. It's like, I know that because I'm like a Avatar fan and stuff like that, but I feel like if like you just show this show for the first time to like a lot of other people, like people would be very weirded out at certain scenes and stuff like that. The one that comes to mind is the narration that Gran did, where she just does the narration for the show. It got to the point where I had to like do a double take, like, what is she just doing the whole like word for word narrations? Like, have you seen J.J. Abrams' Star Trek?
Yeah.
Into Darkness. Well, that was actually the first Star Trek I saw. It wasn't a great first impression. And there was a scene in it where Benedict Cumberbatch character says, "I am Khan." And I'm like, that's very, when I first saw that, I'm like, that's kind of a weird thing. But then years later, as I got older, I was like, oh, that's a reference to this. But it's like, why would you? It like, to me, that just seemed like super weird. But it's like, yeah, to a person who's never seen that before, that would just stick out like a sore thumb. So, I wouldn't really recommend this to someone who wasn't really a Avatar fan. I would say I would recommend this to someone who's like Avatar fan that's like craving just for anything new.
Chris, what about you?
Yeah. Again, I'm gonna have to echo Mike. I put it in my reaction on TikTok. I recommend it to anyone who grew up on the show. It's something for you, definitely. Like, you're definitely, you know, you're part of the audience. But if you don't know it, if you're not familiar with it, it does feel a little niche. There are a lot of things that only fans of the original show will like look and be like, oh, like the DiCaprio meme with the whistle, like this, you know, like, oh, there it is. And also, you have to be invested to really finish it. I feel like the pacing and tone is a little slow at times, like throughout the show. Like, you need to be invested in these. Like, you have to already know what's going on, who these people are, in order to continue. Because without any context or background, I feel like this show, to someone of the general audience, would feel really slow and not boring, but like where's the hook? Like, mm-hmm. like the actor who plays Aang. It's so hard to critique child actors, but
of course, you know,
Aang has so much like brightness and joy and spontaneity about him. Like, and I know for this version, they wanted to focus and make him more serious, but like Aang's personality is a major hook for the show. Like, he's the main character, and his fear of what he has to do, and while accompanied by his incredible skills, it just makes him a really interesting dynamic character. And a lot of those dynamics are kind of missing from the show. So I feel like there's nothing really to hook someone from the general audience to this.
Gordon Cormier is Aang in this. And I'm going to ask you guys whether or not you think that the characters really kind of match up and line up with the cartoon versions here. But yeah, he plays Aang in this. So I'm going to start with the positives. I'm going to start with the positives first here. So one thing I will say is that, yes, they do kind of get more of the martial arts stuff right. They implement that here better than, as Chris mentioned, something like in M. Night Shyamalan's movie here. And the beginning of the first episode opens up pretty good. They do the earthbending stuff, and it's starting like with this no-name guy, mm-hmm. You know, trying to deliver this message. Very, kind of, I guess, Star Wars-like, which the cartoon did a lot of references to movies and things. So that felt very good. So I think that's an improvement here. As Chris mentioned before, I think that they get the costumes right. They get the names right. They get that stuff pretty well. I think for the most part here, I think people are acting-wise, playing the characters. They do decent. I think the people who do the best at playing their cartoon counterpart, I would say maybe even is a slight improvement somewhat, is Ken Leon, who plays Commander Zhao. I think he does really good. I think he does a pretty good job. And it seems like they kind of made him more of the main bad guy here than as opposed to Zuko in this kind of season. I did think he was pretty good. Paul Sun Hung Lee, who plays Uncle Iroh, I think that's pretty good casting. Mm-hmm. Kim's convenience guy. He also shows up in a bunch of the Star Wars stuff now. He gets those Disney checks. He shows up in Mandalorian and all that stuff. So he's probably eating pretty good right now. And I do like how they change certain story beats in this live action version compared to the cartoon. Like Mike, he had a tweet where I think it was showing Uncle Iroh, I think it was, where I love Uncle Iroh. Love him. I think he's great. I think if out of all the mentor figures in media, I think he's number one for me. You know, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Master Splinter, all the other ones. I think Uncle Iroh is high up there. There were some moments in the cartoon where it kind of bordered on, you know, Master Roshi kind of trope of anime, horny, creep type things. And
never too hard, though.
Yeah. So they didn't do that much in the show. It was kind of rarely, but they kind of toned it down here. And then, you know, they didn't really do that here, which I thought was good. Also, the storyline, the story beat of when they go to Northern Water Tribe, and then there's the sexist waterbending master that Katara, you know, she tries to learn from. I thought they handled that a lot better. I think when me and Mike discussed it in our book 3 review of kind of how that situation gets resolved in the cartoon, it's just kind of like, oh, hey, I knew your grandmother. So, hey, I guess I'll train you now since I was like, hey, I got a connection to your grandma and I kind of want to maybe bang your grandma. You know what I mean? We had a thing back in the day. So I think they resolved that issue better here because I think they show that she actually does prove herself and then inspires maybe the other women to take up more of a role here in the Water Tribe as opposed to there. So I thought that was good. Chris, what are some positives that you really like about this live?
Yeah, if I can just go down like my own list, I thought, like I said, Zuko is a great character, so I thought Dallas James Liu, same as Sokka, the anger, the angst, and the desperation to get back what he lost, trying so hard to please his father, who in actuality doesn't really care about him in that way. He'd rather stoke the flame between his two children and make them, you know, like pit them against each other than actually be a good father. Yeah, so like Zuko is awesome. Sokka is great. Suki was really cool. And like we said, Zhao was awesome as well.
And for funny me,
yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, funny enough, that actor who played Commander Zhao, Ken Leon, there was that story that he didn't even know what the hell Avatar The Last Airbender was. Like, he showed up, and he thought he was going to, and he's like, oh, I thought this was a James Cameron movie. What the fuck is Avatar The Last Airbender? Yeah. That's kind of funny enough, but I'm sorry about that. Good.
Yeah, I love Ken Leon. He'll always be, is it Jun Tao from the first Rush Hour movie?
I believe it is, yeah.
He's the guy who Chris Tucker is like beefing with the entire movie, like put your gun down, fight like a man, like that guy. I guess the positives come from the fact that there's so much about the world that looks right and feels right. I know Josh and I were both big fans of Amber Midthunder from Prey. She had guest appearance on Reservation Dogs season 2, and now she's a Princess Yue. I know there's some comments about her wig, but besides the wig, I think she was a great Princess Yue. I was wondering when they introduced Jet if they were gonna just let have it be Jet and not his squad. And I was like, are they just doing Jet and no one else? That's kind of wild. But eventually they did show us the Freedom Warriors or the Freedom Fighters. That was really great. The way, even though we know it wasn't all real, the way the set design was, like the way the Northern Water Tribe looked was really great. Omashu, even though it wasn't real, I think it still looks the way, you know, like I remember it looking in the series. Unfortunately, the positives kind of stop at like at some technical stuff, but the overall story, you know, yeah. But for positives, it's the casting, it's the way the world looks, the bending forms. Even though they kind of lost the bending forms in some sequences, there was still a lot of, you know, jumping and like high kicks for the fire bending, a lot of stomping for the earth bending, a lot of tai chi movements for the water bending, and it seems that Gordon Cormier actually has some martial arts background. He looks very, very comfortable with like the twists and turns of like the circle walking style, Bagua. That looks really good. So the action, I would say, is also a plus, and like the bending and the way it looked.
Mm. Mike, what about you? What are some of your
positives? I'd say I do like a lot of the ideas for the changes they have initially and like kind of the different scenarios. And it's kind of one of my defenses of the show is that this is an adaptation. I think kind of the best part of the show is where they kind of take the characters, like put them in a completely different scenario and stuff like that. It's like, and some people are very mad at it, but it's like, actually, I like the idea, like, what if Bumi was initially a more, like, what if this version of Bumi was, like, a more cynical person? The idea of him having to make decisions year after year for 100 years as a king while there's a huge war. That's very interesting, but it kind of, like, flutters out and doesn't go anywhere. I like a lot of the looks for a lot of the Fire Nation soldiers as well. I do think that can something be lost in kind of, like, the a lot of movies or adaptations of like a bit too clean cut, but here like everyone's got like crazy mutton chops. Some people has like fucked up teeth and stuff like that. Some character, like I go back, it's like kind of like what I said before of like playing them in different scenarios. I like seeing Iroh and Aang interact from the beginning, stuff like that. I like seeing that. I like the idea of like, oh, what if Jet's more like in the city, and like how would that, like what if they met Jet at a different area? That's kind of what I feel like the show needed more of, like more like different scenarios, different takes on the adventures, like the whole like mask, the Blue Spirits episode, where they kind of do the retelling of that. I was thinking like, what if instead of like it's Aang and like Zuko trying to save Aang. Well, if it's like they get captured by like earthbender mercenaries who are like, ah, we're gonna give you guys both to the Fire Lord and stuff like that, and you're handcuffed together. We have to have a whole episode where they're handcuffed together and they work together and they're like fighting people and stuff like that. Because that would be a different thing. I do like a lot of the voices they got for the spirits. Even if I'm not a huge fan of what they did with the spirits in this, I like hearing George Takei and stuff like that. And there are some fun references to both the comics and the books, which is like, oh, that's neat.
Okay. I'd say to kind of round out a little bit more the positives here, I do like Daniel Day-Kim, who shows up as Ozai. I think they introduce him, you know, way earlier than they did in the show and kind of make him more of a character here than they did there. I think one of kind of the flaws of the cartoon is with Ozai and kind of what they did there, because he really doesn't really show up until the third season, and he's just kind of like the bad guy. That's pretty much it. So I do like that a little bit. And then they also do introduce Azula a lot earlier than they did, who only in the first season was shown in a flashback. Here she's, you know, you get to see a lot more of her as well. I think the biggest fault of this show is I was watching a review, Doug Walker from Channel Awesome. He did a review of this, and I was watching it, and he compared it to the Disney remakes, where, you know, you watch these Disney remakes, and they'll add stuff to it, and it's not sometimes always necessarily bad, but it's just like, okay, but why did you really add that to it? Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't really seem like it's just, you're just adding stuff, just go like, okay, you see, we're not doing exactly beat for beat the same thing. We added this or that to it. And one of those is like, you know, like you see a Disney remake, like Beauty and the Beast, they made Belle an inventor. It's like, okay, that doesn't really do all that much for the story, really. And in this, the live action Avatar Last Airbender series, you know, they'll make tweaks and changes here and there to certain things. Sometimes for good, sometimes for not. Like I mentioned, the stuff with the Master Ben and Paku, that was good. But then showing the Air Nomad Genocide, I think that was just to have an action sequence to just start off things right away. It's the first episode, like, and then, you know, they said they want to make it kind of a less, you know, hardcore Game of Thrones, I think the creators of the show said. And the creator of this is Albert Kim, who's the creator of this, and he directed quite a bit of the episodes of this. I will say, you know, fun action sequence there. And the firebending in this does look, it's way more visceral than in the cartoon, because when people die from firebending, I mean, they get incinerated. I mean,
someone dies in like the first 5 minutes of this. I was like, oh, I was actually shocked.
I mean, people get barbecued in this, and that is pretty hardcore there. So there is that. But the dialogue is, I don't think, really good.
No.
I think it's really too on the nose. I think you see that a lot. First episode of, like, he has his Air Nomad mentor, Aang does, and he's like, you know, he's really nailing on the head that how special he is and how amazing he is. And, you know, your kindness will, you know, lead the world to balance and safety. And all. It's just like a lot of the stuff is really on the nose. And I think a lot of the performances in general will range from, sometimes they could be okay, and then sometimes when they try to maybe do a little bit more dramatic stuff, it can kind of get a little bit bad here. What about you, Mike? What did you feel about kind of the performances here and the dialogue there?
I think I like, again, it's kind of unfair to, because a lot of them are younger, but it's like, it's probably one of their first big roles. I like a lot of the older actors a lot more, mainly like Yatsu and like Iroh, as we mentioned, Zhao. Those are all pretty good. Some of the other stuff is like a bit like kind of weird, and like, it's almost that, like, to a degree, it kind of feels like that Family Guy bit of, like, going to movies and then pointing at the movie when they say the title of the movie, of, like, we are the Reservoir Dogs. Like, ah, he said it. He said the thing. That's what a lot of the performances kind of felt like, especially, like, Suki's performance. Which is like, that's why I'm not just a warrior. I'm a Kyoshi warrior. It's like, it's kind of my thing. It's like, because of the nature of the show and animation in general, you're able to get to characters that, like, Mac has talked about this, that are almost like coded a lot older than they actually are. Kind of, because, like, he's brought this up with Azula. Like, when Azula was introduced, he's like, I thought she was 17. Like, because she does not come off as a 14-year-old. And I think that was one of the changes that the show probably could have benefited from, of like, hey, why don't we make them a bit older than their counterparts and stuff like that. Yeah, it's just kind of the reality of doing an adaptation of this, of like, you don't think how many things go into animation, because of animation, it's like, well, it's not just the voice actor, it's also the animator, it's also the character designer, it's all these things working together to make this character work. And like, there are facial expressions, there are modelers, there are like people who's gonna rig that thing, and like, even just like storyboard artists, it's like, oh, let's put a bit more personality into it, how he moves. Here you kind of don't get that, so it comes off more as like a kind of like a school play performance of a lot of these characters.
Yeah, and this is the wig that Chris mentioned before. Yeah, that does look. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I also remember hearing people saying like, "Ah, oh, she looks too like she doesn't look like dark skinned enough." But it's like, there was a weird like color saturating thing, because when you look at her like on the red carpet and stuff, it's like, oh, that's different. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, a bunch of digital film has that problem now when it comes to like, especially the like kind of like mixed women and stuff like that, or like light brown women. It's like, if you don't like kind of film it right, like something weird is going to happen to their skin. Have you seen the Charlie's Angel remake?
Yes, I have
seen that. Bella something. She was in Resident Evil show, and she was in the game Forspoken. Yeah. She needs a better agent, but like, she was in the Charlie's Angel movie, and people were like, "Is she black?" I could have sworn she was like white. It's just like, it's a super weird color saturation thing.
Yeah, Ella Balinski.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's her.
Yeah. So I've seen her in the Resident Evil show. Yeah, different things like that. Chris, what about you?
The more we talk about it, the more positives I did think about, and they do tie into performances and acting. Mm-hmm. Again, back to Zuko. In the animated series, when he's in season book one, when he's hunting Aang, he is angry. He's kind of feral. He's very aggressive in the way he's like, he's obsessed with getting this job done so he can go home and, you know, honor and the throne and all that. In this live action series, I like how they made him a lot more empathetic. He's clearly, even with the burn, even with the banishment, he's clearly at his core, you can see he's kind and he cares about the people who are in his life. He cares about his crew. He cares about his uncle. He's not even pursuing Aang in like a really angry way. It's purely like duty. He's like, it's just something I have to do. He doesn't seem angry about his pursuit of Aang. And I really like that part. And also something that went viral kind of fast episode. It's either the fourth or fifth episode where we get Leaves from the Vine. We get that flashback of Iroh's son Luten's funeral. And Zuko gives him like he starts off giving like a simple condolence, and then he walks away, comes back. He says like, "Luten gave me this. He said it'll make me strong. Luten was the strongest person I knew, so I know he didn't need it, but maybe you do." And then he stays with his uncle. He sits next to him. Like those kind of moments, mm-hmm. Nothing spoken. It's all like action, and it speaks volumes to like the kind of person Zuko is. And then the Kyoshi warrior thing was very on the nose, but I will say, going into this series, we were told Sokka wasn't going to be sexist, you know. That arc where he learns that women can do just about anything like a man can do, like on the battlefield, you know, that arc wasn't going to be in the show. So I was curious, how are they going to handle that? And I think they handled it kind of well in this series. Instead of, you know, like, oh, you're a girl, like, how did I lose to you? There's an immediate respect for the Kyoshi warriors that Sokka has, and they bond over being warriors of their respective, you know, homes. So that really worked, I thought, considering we were confused and worried that it wouldn't work. So, those are probably, like the really strong moments for me acting-wise and, like, in terms of character work. the weaker performances, that the performances that didn't really feel so close to home was, you know, Aang, Katara, and I'm gonna be in the minority here because we all love Paul Hyung Lee, but besides the Leaf on the Vine moment and the moment in episode 6 where he's like happy that Zuko's back and like he didn't you know get blown up and he survived and he's like checking out his scars and like he's like, you know, fawning over him. Besides those moments, there's a lot of Uncle Iroh in this live action series that to me felt more like silly favorite teacher and less warm, loving uncle. The voice actor, Mako, who they honored in that episode, his voice just like Paul Chung, like this Uncle Iroh, he looks old, he doesn't sound old.
Yeah, like, I think it's kind of the thing of like Mako Yamato had a very distinct voice.
Yeah,
like
low. Yeah, kind of raspy. Had that gruff.
Yeah, they had to get like someone like Greg Baldwin to, because he was like a professional libertarian. It's like, yeah, he's able to nail that voice, but it's like it's a very difficult voice to kind of replicate. And like also Mako Yamato was like a crazy smoker, which a lot of people don't know. Which is kind of why his voice is so low like this.
Yeah, so like, and I think Paul Chung Lee is a talented actor. I was hoping he would do something slight to change his voice a little bit to sound a bit older, but unfortunately for me, for me at least, it was kind of the weaker performances because Uncle Iroh is such a high standard. It's a big role, big shoes to fill, and there were moments where I saw it that he did capture the essence, but for the most part I felt like it was missing.
I wonder if it's kind of that thing of with an adaptation stuff like this, and I brought this up a few times, of kind of like smoothing over the characters to try and make them more like initially likable and like less problematic and like doing the bad stuff. Cause that was an interesting thing with like when they introduced Zhao earlier, it's like, oh, I actually really like Zhao. Like he comes off a lot more like cunning and underhanded and stuff like that. But it's like, then they're having Zhao do stuff like he's invading Kyoshi Island, stuff like that. It's like, oh, okay. So he's doing all the bad stuff that Zuko did. So, but it's like, if he does that, Zuko never did anything like awful, but he never like, you never like cut off anyone's hands or like anything like that, but it's like the reason why like Zuko's redemption also works so well is that like you do get to see him do all that bad stuff, and like why the game was like kind of actually was really strongly against him coming on board at first and stuff like that, and like that portrayal that he did to Katara. But it's like when you have Zhao do all this stuff, it kind of doesn't like have this, it won't have the same impact. And it's like, yeah, and they kind of do a similar thing with Iroh, and it kind of got to the point where it's like, I was very interested in the episode where they kind of like speed up his capture and stuff like that, and one of them is an earthbender whose brother was killed under like Iroh's army. And it's like, I kind of like the, you know, I like that moment of like Iroh, because that is even a criticism of the show that's been coming up nowadays, of like it really kind of like brushes over Iroh's war crimes when he was invading. he probably would have like overseen like the massacre of Nanking in real life, but it's like but because it's a cartoon, you can kind of like suspend your morality a bit thinner and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, I guess I can believe that more. In a show like this, I think it would have been more interesting if there was like a almost like a harsher tone to it, or like a harsher, like people treat Iroh a lot harsher and stuff like that. Like, you killed like so many people, all this stuff. And it's like, he was called the Dragon of the West for a reason.
Yeah, so like I said, I don't want to try too much to compare it to the cartoon here. Yeah,
of course.
But, you know, with the cartoon, it doesn't seem like it. The show has the same sense of urgency, because as me and Mike talked about during book 3, it kind of takes place under a year, and there's an urgency to Aang to learn all the elements so he can face the Fire Lord, so he can, you know, be in the Avatar state. Here, I don't think that's ever brought up in the show. He's never like, man, I got to learn all these elements, you know, and kind of learn. Like, he doesn't even do any water bending at all in this season, which is very strange.
That we also don't, we don't, it doesn't inform us that Sultan's Comet's going to be coming back at the end of the year until the very last episode.
Yeah, that's not a thing. That's very strange that, yeah, like, he does zero water bending, zero, you know, concern about that. Obviously, they can't have the same sense of, like, time as the cartoon, because, like I said, these are real actors, so they're going to get older quicker, you know, in between season. If this does get a season 2, 3, 4, they're probably going to be in their mid-late 20s by the time the show's over. Not really Aang, though, because he's actually the one closest to the actual age of the character. He's 15. Aang is supposed to be 12 in the series, so they actually, you know, kind of match that well. But, you know, like, the actor for Katara, I think she's, like, in her... Well, she's 17. So she's 17. The actor who plays Sokka, he's, I think, 21. So they actually do kind of get somewhat closer to those ages. But yeah, so they're going to get much older. You don't want it to be a thing like Stranger Things with, you know, those kids. Damn, they almost fucking 30 now. You know, they're trying to still play in high school. It's like, bro, that time is up. It's a wrap. Like, you see the black kid from Stranger Things. He in the Book of Clarence, he got a whole beard now. It's like, it's like, bro.
To be fair, I was that kid in high school too. I was the one with like so much body hair and facial hair. It just hit me like a storm. I remember for like one day of middle school, like, I don't know if it was sixth grade or seventh grade, I took off my shirt. I was the only one there with like chest and body hair. And one kid, I swear to God, just literally said, "What's wrong with your body?" It's like, that's gonna, that'll ruin your confidence growing up.
Yeah, so I mean, you don't want it to be a thing like that, where it kind of happens. But yeah, so that doesn't come up. The animals in the show, Appa, Momo. When you watch the show, they are characters in the show. It's like Appa isn't just
Appa more so,
you know, mode of transportation for them to get to point A to point B. And I understand, like, effects wise, budget wise, that's the reason why probably Appa isn't in it as much. But you really do miss the presence of them as well, because they, you know, Appa saves their lives multiple times in the show, and he also does a lot of things for them. So, yeah, I mean, that's a key kind of thing missing from this that's not there. So, yeah, I'm kind of going to go around, get you guys' final thoughts and kind of rating on this. My final thoughts and kind of rating would be simply, like I say, if you've never heard of Avatar: Last Airbender before, if you have never heard about it and want to just, like, could I recommend this? It's like, hey, I got a cool new show for you to check out and you to watch. Would this be something I could recommend to people? And no, I don't think this is. You know, if you are already a fan of this series, I don't think it does anything to really add to this world of Avatar: The Last Airbender. You know, you had something kind of like The Last of Us, where even people who love the game love the show, because they were like, even though I know what's coming next, I think they do a great job at adapting that. I think it's just fine. It's not god awful to me, but I wouldn't be eager to watch it again like I am the cartoon. It's just kind of like, it's just decent. It's whatever. That's kind of about it to it. So yeah, that's kind of for me. Mike, what about you?
Pretty much the same. I'd say if you're a starving Avatar fan that needs something like visually, you're not like a comic or a book person, I would say maybe watch Korra. But if you don't want to watch Korra, or you fed that up, I would watch... I guess you can watch this. I would personally skip this if you're kind of a neutral fantasy person, or you were just kind of like a average fan of Avatar. Like, oh yeah, I really like that show, but you know, I'm not starving for anything new. That's pretty much my consensus.
What would be your rating? What would you give it?
Oh, like a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, we kind of go from, so our highest, you can give some This Is Cinema.
Skip it.
Skip it? Okay.
Yeah. You
skip it. Okay. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat as everyone. I know for the most part, I usually try to keep it really positive, but, you know, if certain things I can't ignore. Just one more nitpick. It was really weird in a Spirited Away. Aang leaves the bodies of Katara and Sokka, and he goes to the Fire Nation, to Sozin's, to Roku's temple, and makes immediate contact. In the animated series, he had to wait for the solstice to make contact with Roku, but in this, he just It was very casual, very loose with the rules and the lore.
Well, I think it's because it's a spirit and specifically Ko. It's like that's like a huge, like, even if you weren't aware of the show, it's like it would see almost like it would almost be like the equivalent of like, oh, a vampire kidnapped your friends and like Aang just like fucked off for a bit. It's like Aang, they're like in serious danger.
Yeah, so like that was just one thing I was like, he just left their soulless bodies there. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's just to reiterate, it's better than M. Night Shyamalan's movie. It's not as good as the original animated, obviously. There are moments that fans of the original animated series can identify and cheer for, but for the most part, out of 8 episodes, 5 of them are really convoluted and jam-packed with characters and moments, and it doesn't always fit. The last 3 episodes have time to breathe and be their own thing. Josh, what do you have above Stream It and what do you have below Stream It?
So below Stream It is a skip it, and below that skip it is a waste of fucking film, and then above Stream It you have a tune in.
Okay. I guess Stream It. I just got a text from my cousin, my auntie, who she's a 60-year-old, you know, Jamaican woman. She did not watch the original animated series, but she's watching it right now, the live action show, and she's enjoying it so far.
My dad's that way with Cowboy Bebop.
Nice.
I think my dad's he's watched all the World War II documentaries he can watch, because now he's watching like stuff like Castlevania and like samurai anime. It's like still like dad media. He's also watched all of Reacher, before you ask.
Yeah. So with that said, I would say Stream It. It's it's entertaining enough. If you're familiar with the world, then there's things you can celebrate and be happy about. And if you're brand new to it, maybe this could be the thing to get you into it, and then you could revisit the animated series and Legend of Korra. But I would say Stream It.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Who knows?
I'd say low Stream It for me, kind of bordering on a skip it. Do you think this can improve, like maybe a season 2? You can see like maybe.
I think so. I genuinely think a season 2 can improve if they take a departure from just making it to like kind of focus away from fan service and kind of make it its own thing and put the characters in different scenarios and stuff like that. But. Yeah, who knows? There's always potential for something like this. Yeah, was it announced for season 2?
I don't think so. I don't think it has been announced for season 2. But I think it's doing pretty well on Netflix. I think it's in the top 10 on Netflix. People are checking out. I think most reactions to it have been mixed, kind of.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's been pretty mixed. I think out of the trio, I think probably for me who does the weakest job is the one who plays Katara. And not because of her, but I just think the way they have her. Like, I think
she's a smoothed over version of Katara. Like, she doesn't have that rage, or she never gets really knocked down too much. It was weird that episode with Jet where Katara basically judo throws Jet. It's like that probably shouldn't happen, because Katara's more of a like a, she's like the mage of a group, and like, you know, Jet's like a free fire. It's like, you should have her beat him with bending, stuff like that. But it's like, yeah, it's one of those things.
Yeah. So because like you said, she's almost kind of like the glue that keeps everybody together, like the mother of the group, really. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like the one that really holds it. And then here, just I don't know. I feel like they made, like I said, smoothed over version of Katara. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it. That's pretty much Avatar: Let's Airbend live action. Was it as like watching the trailers? Was it about like this is what you expected to give it? Pretty much watching the trailer.
I would say half of it, but I would say there's a quarter of it where it becomes way more weird and bizarre than I thought it was going to be. But then there is another like actual quarter of me that's like, you know what? I can kind of see what you're doing here. Like, I can kind of see the intention, and like, I kind of think you can work something from this.
Okay. And what about you, Chris?
Like going into the show, there was more announcements about the changes that they had made. I still had hope, but after watching it, like, they made a lot of changes. So it ended up not being as good as I thought it was going to be, because the trailer made it seem like it was going to be a direct adaptation. Like, everything you saw is just going to be brought into live action, and it's going to be great. But they took a lot of creative liberties when the creators of the show walked away. They definitely kind of did their own thing. So it's definitely not as good as I thought it was going to be going in.
Yeah. I'm curious what the creators of the show added, because if what they added was the stuff that I liked, like the changes that I liked, I'd be pretty sad, like, going forward, that it's like, oh, now we're just doing the strict adaptation. Like, that would kind of bum me out, but, like, I hope this can work out.
Yeah,
I hope these actors get more stuff in the future, stuff like that.
Brian Canetso and Michael Dante DiMartino, who the creators of the cartoon, they worked on the Netflix live action for a little bit, and then they stepped away, like what they did with the M. Night Shyamalan movie. They did the same thing.
They actually caused a bit of a tear between their relationship, the M. Night Shyamalan movie. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, a little bit of a tear, and it's like, because it was also when they were doing Korra, it was like, it ended up being like a kind of like a breakup from their like writing duo. I'm not sure. I think they might be back together. I'm not entirely sure. It might be like a Ninja Turtles situation, which our original creators worked together for a lot of it, but then like after some time, like, that one project made them break up. But like, yeah, the movie put a lot of strain on their relationship. And to be fair, adapting the whole movie into just a single season of television like this is crazy. Like, it would have to be like 3 hours for it to work.
Yeah. Damn. So this movie caused more damage in more ways than one. Not only was it a shitty movie, damn, it's breaking up relationships too. Damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
How's that movie end? Oh, wait. Yeah, Aang just like makes a tsunami. He doesn't turn to the water kaiju.
No, it's just a big wave. Yeah. That's it.
I like Dante and Iroh. I like Zuko and Iroh, though, in this. I think those are two good actors.
Yeah. So you gave it a skip it there, Mike. Yep. Chris gave it a stream it, and I gave it a low stream it myself for Avatar, The Last Airbender.